You and I back together again midweek Wednesday, November 15th, 2023 on Connecticut Today. We chatted with Republican State Senate Leader Kevin Kelly of Stratford on a key vote connected to a plan that would stop the sale of all internal combustion engine vehicles in the state by the year 2035. Hearst Connecticut Media editor and columnist Dan Haar chatted with us about election turnout in the state, and I had a few more thoughts regarding possible new laws after the current Bridgeport absentee ballot controversy. All right, we'll do another check of traffic and weather together in just a bit right here on WICC 600 AM 107.3 FM or online at WICC600.com. State Republicans gathering with some other folks earlier today to, again, as I've been on this program, as I know a lot of the other hosts around the state have been doing, just alerting you to an upcoming vote now that I think is scheduled on the 28th by a bipartisan committee that could be the last real chance of, if not scuttling this whole idea of eliminating the sale of internal combustion engine vehicles here in just 10 or 11 model years, if not scuttling it completely, but looking at it, maybe reworking it to get it to more realistic goals here without burdening commuters. And frankly, without relying on a grid that doesn't exist, a power and charging capacity that does not exist. And joining us right now is Republican State Senate Leader Kevin Kelly of Stratford. Hey, Kevin, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. I'm doing well.
And Kevin, explain, and I've explained it a couple of times, but you're a member of this body. So explain, if you will, Kevin, in a couple of weeks, this vote coming up by you and six other Republicans. So seven Republicans and seven Democrats, a bipartisan, it's a regulations review committee. And how does that all, Kevin, shake out with this regulation that the more you tell people about it, Kevin, the more they go, well, huh? When did that happen? So explain all this.
Yeah, so basically what happens is under federal law for air quality under the Clean Air Act, states can either follow the federal EPA guidelines or California. But you got to be in one camp or the other. And what's happening now is the administration through a DEP is by regulation choosing to follow the California standards. And the big difference between the two is that the California standards are much more aggressive. They're almost radical in the sense that they're taking away people's right to choose what type of vehicle they want. In other words, starting in 2035, they're going to prohibit people from purchasing a gas-powered car. That would be banned. You couldn't buy a new gas-powered car anymore in the state of Connecticut. And, you know, we think that first and foremost, that's an overreach, that something so important needs to be handled by the General Assembly for for several reasons. First and foremost, that's the people's representative. The bureaucrats in Hartford aren't elected. Your state reps and state senators are. So we're the ones that should be making that decision. The other aspect of this is we could have public hearings. People can come. People can lobby their representatives as to whether or not they think this is good, bad, or indifferent for the stated purpose, which the stated purpose is to make sure that we have clean air and we comply not only with federal law, but recognize climate change is present and that we want to resolve this. Now, what the administration is proposing is follow the California standards and move to an entirely electric transportation system. And the problem with that is we don't have the capacity. So it's really banning cars with no plan for us to get to all electric vehicles. First, they're expensive. But just look at the many of the listeners in the greater Bridgeport area. If you live in a public housing, senior housing, multiple family housing, if you don't have on-site parking where you live or work, what are you going to do with your car? Where are you going to plug in? We don't have enough chargers. We don't have enough capacity, in the grid so that you can deliver electricity. And, you know, if that's the case, then you're either going to have the electricity for your car or for your house, but not both. And what are we going to do and how are we going to get there? And none of these questions have been answered by the administration. As a matter of fact, they're saying, well, don't worry. We're going to get there, just like they promised 10 years ago that we would have affordable, accessible, and quality health care.
Yeah.
Nobody's premiums have gone down. Nobody's mm-hmm. health care has gotten less expensive. Just like the money that went to lottery was going to go into education.
Yeah.
Just like the $27 million we pay like on our license and car registration for emissions and clean air that never goes to the intended purpose.
Or Kevin, like the state pier that was supposed to cost what, $90 million, and we're up to what, $300
right.
million?
Exactly.
Kevin Kelly is the guest. Yeah, Kevin, this is the thing that even people who are for an environmental regulation to mandate clean cars, even they call me and say, well, but where are we going to get the power from? And Kevin, I like probably like you, I don't want to put words in your mouth, I have nothing against electric vehicles. In fact, I think, Kevin, as the market changes, maybe 30, 40, 50, 100 years from now, gasoline-powered cars will be the exception and electric cars will be the norm. But again, like you said, there's no indication from the state, Kevin. They never say, now along with this, we're going to look at what we're going to do for the electric grid here, and we're going to build all these new generation plants. Kevin, it's crickets on that stuff. You never hear it.
Right. And where are those substations going to go? My concern is, first and foremost, it's $2.4 billion infrastructure improvement that's needed. But then where are they going to go? Is it going to be in the communities right now buying electric vehicles,
mm-hmm.
which tend to be your more affluent locations, or is it going to be more like places around the greater Bridgeport area that are more industrial? I mean, and is that fair? On the other hand, what we should be looking at is, you know, if you go the EPA route, there are other ways we can look at things and start looking at all of the above. I mean, there's so many things here, Paul. I mean,
yeah.
Just what I looked at with, you know, we're looking at, we need more electricity in order to meet this. But at the same time, like President Biden, he denied the hub for the Northeast. You have the governor's administration with Pura. Mm-hmm. denying improvements to our grid and charging stations. And even in locally here in the city of Bridgeport, they changed the zone on the harbor so that Park City Wind is now potentially not going to go forward.
Yeah.
So these are, you know, other sources of electricity to help build and reinforce our grid. But Democrats are actually undercutting their own initiative. And this is where you scratch your head and you're like, we want to get to the same place, but let's put the building blocks in place first.
And
let's utilize, for instance, the federal money from Washington, the transportation dollars, and let's start doing some green transportation. Why not that?
And Kevin, I see now a lot of the trucking industry and the heavy trucks that really, the medium size trucks, Kevin, the heavy trucks, many of which don't even exist yet on a viable electric basis, are starting to say, hey, this is bad, you know, for us too. And Kevin, I'm into this technology enough where I know that, you know, an electric or hybrid compact is a whole lot different than, you know, some big electric truck that's got to be on the road all day idling and making deliveries.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and with regards to trucks, they passed a law that requires new trucks to start being phased in 2027. And right now you have one truck uses the power of 400 homes. And Paul, in Connecticut, we have 5,400, I think it was, vehicles, trucks registered. And if you extrapolate this out, you're going to need almost 400 homes. What will happen is, using a fully electric truck in Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
it would use 40%. You'd need 40% of Connecticut would do without power on a daily basis.
Well, no problem there.
So that would give the people a choice. Do I want to keep my electricity, my refrigeration, heating, Wi-Fi, telephone, television, or do I want my goods and services, whether it's groceries or Amazon, delivered, but I'm not going to get both?
Yeah. Kevin, final question. There's seven Republicans. I know you guys and gals will probably all vote no on this. Seven Democrats, and I'm seeing where one of the prominent names is Kathy Austin, one of your Democrat compatriots from the eastern part of the state. And all, what if, Kevin, one or two Democrats broke with their party and voted along with you folks on the Republican side to basically stop the implementation of that? Then where do we go?
Okay, so then what would happen is the issue, one of two things. Either the DEP could then reevaluate and say, you know what, we've heard what the Republicans are saying, and maybe we ought to go the EPA route, the federal route, which, by the way, 32 other states are going in that direction,
mm-hmm.
Maybe more. Or they could say, no, we really want this reg, we think it is right, and then take it to the full General Assembly.
Mm-hmm.
And have every member, where it's not bipartisan, it's not seven Democrats and seven Republicans. You know, in the Senate, it's 24 Democrats and 12 Republicans, where they could just impose their will. But it would also give everybody the opportunity to vote, take a stand and say yes or no to this, and let the people know back mm-hmm. home whether or not, you know, you voted to take their gas power car away.
All right. Kevin, thanks. We'll be watching this vote in a couple of weeks and keep me up to date on this, okay?
Okay, great. Take care, Paul.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Kevin. There it is. So, there's a vote coming up on the 28th by the Regulations Review Panel or Regulations Review Committee. Seven Democrats, seven Republicans. Usually, this stuff sails through. But if just one Democrat, and there's rumored to be one, two, or three out of the seven that doesn't like this, if they cross the aisle and vote with the seven Republicans who are going to vote no, then, like Kevin said, it's got to go back to the full General Assembly, which I'm all for. Listen, if they pass it, they pass it. At least put your names on it. Ken is with us before we do news in Stratford. Hello, Ken. What's up?
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I just want to chime in on this. What a lot of people are missing is that the ultimate goal is not that everybody drives around in an electric car mm-hmm. and every truck be electric, but that the vast majority of people, and again, he was saying working class people, low income people, all these people that drive around in gasoline powered secondhand cars will be forced to take public transportation.
That's part of it. I don't doubt it.
When you go down the street now and you look inside of a bus, there's like three or four people in it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 10.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. What they want is those buses to be packed. They want it to be a state like Connecticut or Massachusetts or Rhode Island to be like New York City. Everybody takes mass transit, and only rich people and the truckers will have electric cars, and that's how they're going to do it. There's no way mathematically that you could possibly have every person driving an electric car.
Exactly.
It's just, it can't be done.
There's no power. There's no power, Ken. Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate that. Ken is right. See, Ken just distilled it down for us. Matt, the numbers don't add up. Ken, thank you. That was perfect. There's not enough power. And every time they talk about this, and they're confronted with you know, well, excuse me, but where's the power going to come from? Well, we'll answer that along the way. But this is vital for the environment. No, it doesn't work that way. If you're trying to sell me or the other voters of the state on this, you need to have a complete plan. Well, a house is burning. Yeah, it is. Huh? Well, wait a minute. Where's the fire engine? Where's the water? Yeah, we're working on that. Oh. All right, back to open phones. More of the poll numbers coming up a little bit later on. New Quinnipiac poll we didn't get to yet. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. But it's a midweek Wednesday this time. Every Wednesday, Dan Haar joins us, columnist, editor from Hearst, Connecticut Media. Mr. Haar, good afternoon, sir, and how are you today?
Good afternoon. I'm just looking at voter turnout charts, and we got all kinds of things to talk about.
Yeah, so let's crunch some of those numbers, Dan. Any trends? What do you see there?
Well, the trend is the same trend that's been forever, which is lower-income locations vote less. That's not entirely the case because, you know, I mean, for example, West Hartford, 33.8% in last week's election. That's not great. You know, that's about the average for the state, and that's a more upscale town. But it's, you know, it depends on individual circumstance. But if there's an overall trend, Hartford's situation is just dire, right?
Yeah.
You cannot continue to have 14% turnout in every election and have the place work. It doesn't – like, more people need to get involved. We had a good candidate. You can say what you will about – Arun Narayanpillai. Some people love him. Some people don't like him quite as much. But he was very much out there,
sure,
campaigning. He had three people campaigning in the primary. Very popular. What's the problem? I don't know. New Haven a little bit better, 25%. Bridgeport was low because it was 20%, but only because of the reality is that intelligent voters may not have voted there because. It didn't matter, right? So, okay, that's understandable. Fairfield, 44%. Great race up there.
It's tough, Dan, though, and you and I have been covering this for years. I've been doing radio news in some way, shape, or form and going to election nights and talking to candidates for something like 40 years now. But gosh darn it, it's tough to get people to care, and it's almost a chicken or the egg thing. Do they care first and then come out to vote, or do you have to push them to vote to care? Because, Dan, I know some incredibly intelligent, high-income people that haven't voted in 20 or 30 years, and I know people of relatively meager means who can hardly pay their bills who never miss an election. It's a funny and incredibly complicated thing, is it not?
Right. Well, in some senses, that's rational. Right. Because if you're super rich, voting, you know, look, government can hurt you a little bit on the margin on taxes. But if you, let's say you're a rich liberal, right, what's the difference? Yeah. They raise my taxes, I'm happy. They lower my taxes, I'm happy. So it's a little bit rational to see that. But what's irrational is the very large numbers of people in middle class towns that are just not voting. And by the way, these numbers are percent of registered voters. So you can lop off another 30% because the percent of eligible voters would obviously in every single case be lower. Kudos to Wallingford, an open seat there for mayor. They haven't had an open seat in 42 years. This guy was in office for 40 years. So kudos to them. 52% turnout in a big town. And obviously you get places like Canaan, you know, they have 63%. So great, you know, 20 people. Kent, you know, but Wallingford's a big place to have that big a number. Old Lyme, 58%. So it's not all terrible. Fairfield, craziness going on, but it's now died down. And we are onward and upward.
Yeah, and you mentioned something here previous in our chat today, and I didn't see this, Dan, but apparently somebody is suggesting what? Representation based on turnout? Where's that from?
I don't want to say the name because it's a fellow reporter.
Okay.
But it was I probably should have gotten his permission if I want to name it, but it was just musing. And every now and then it does come up.
Mm-hmm.
If Hartford and New Haven want to vote at lower numbers, why should they be represented so highly in the legislature?
Mm.
Right. And now, obviously, there are constitutional issues there. People have a right to representation. Right. Of course.
Yeah.
And I'm not suggesting I favor this. But what I am suggesting is that the link between representation and voting, maybe there should be some penalty out there, not fully representational. In other words, it would not be fair because people are in circumstances mm-hmm. where they can't vote in quite as good a number, right? Some people who are poor can't vote because we don't make voting easy enough. And that's what the whole debate is about. And that's what we should talk about as well. What are they going to do in the wake of Bridgeport? And will what they do in the legislature in the wake of Bridgeport in any way impede voting, which defeats the purpose of the general direction of what we've been trying to move at?
Yeah, and I opened the show with that today, and the guest, of course, is Dan Harhurst, Connecticut Media. You know, Dan, it's interesting what we hear from people, what Matt Ritterer said in your publications, and, you know, what Martin Looney is saying, what Bob Duff is saying, and then you get a guy like Joe Arisimowitz, who's not in office anymore. Permission to speak freely, Captain, yes, you know, and Joe Arisimowitz is there saying, and I forgot the quote, I quoted it earlier, saying, well, you know, the, I'm paraphrasing here, but you know the quote I'm talking about, well, the video is there, so we better do something. And I don't know, Dan, to me, and I was musing about this with callers earlier, do you concentrate on clamping down on something that's not supposed to happen anyway but does, the ballot harvesting? I mean, how do you do that? Do you bring in more state people, more Secretary of the State's people when there are these ballots harvested from senior centers? I mean, I don't know what you do.
Let's be clear about what ballot harvesting is,
mm-hmm.
right? If ballot harvesting is going out and having an operation that aggressively seeks and collects absentee ballots from people in accordance with how they truly want to vote,
sure,
and without coercion, right, then the only crime there is in how the ballots are handled,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's a bright line, and that is, do people, whether you call it ballot harvesting or something else, does the vote represent the will of the person voting, right? So let's say that somebody in Bridgeport handled 400 ballots and collected them and put them in a box. Yes, that's ballot harvesting.
Mm-hmm.
But if those 400 people all voted according to their will, that's quite different than if those 400 people were coerced to vote a certain way. Fine line, but important line.
Yeah, and finally, you know, and you've probably, I would hazard to say, you've written about this before, Dan Har, that, you know, there are these regulations. If somebody brings in an absentee ballot, oh, would you like to vote today? They're supposed to be, as I was told once by the League of Women Voters representative, well, they're supposed to be a member of the city's or town's Democratic Party and the Republican Party there to make sure, as you say, there's no coercion going on. But you and I both know, strictly because of logistics, that's darn hard, if not impossible, I would think. I don't know. Maybe there's smarter people than me.
Why, I'm shocked. I am shocked to hear there's gambling going on in this establishment.
A friend of mine always says that. But, Dan, how do you, I mean, I don't know, because there are going to be people now, especially with the video, Dan. Unfortunately, I said earlier before we hooked up today, you could have the cleanest election, Dan, but the real tragedy is if nobody believes it, right? If they say, yeah, sure, that was clean, right?
And that's what's happening in Bridgeport. No matter what happens, there's going to be skepticism in Bridgeport. And Hartford has the opposite problem. Had a nice, clean election, but not enough people came out to Hartford to give Arun and Arulampalam, who deserves a mandate and who proportionally earned a mandate, to really be able to claim that mandate.
All right. Once again, our midweek guest, Dan Harhurst, Connecticut Media. Read him, and stuff is up there all the time. Dan, thank you. Be good, and we'll chat next week, my friend. Thanks.
Great to be here. Have a good week.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate that. Dan Harhurst, Connecticut Media. Yeah, isn't that interesting? And I guess one of his fellow writers at Hearst. It is, and I never thought of this. And God, I don't know how you can fix this, but isn't that interesting? That you have areas that have, let's face it, lousy turnout, yet are, I don't want to say overrepresented, but that have an extremely heavy influence as to all the laws of the state, especially when it comes to kids. Think about this. Especially when it comes to, for example, the committee chairmanships in Hartford, or chairperson to be proper nowadays. And again, I don't besmirch anybody who gets elected from a city, whether they're, you know, longtime Democratic power brokers, Gary Winfield, for example, in New Haven, Robin Porter in New Haven, people in Hartford, people in Bridgeport, we get it. But that's an interesting kind of another byproduct of not a lot of people caring. Now, the flip side of that, you got to be careful saying that, because the flip side of that, well, just because somebody chose not to vote, Paul, for whatever reason, they're disconnected, they don't like the two or three candidates in a specific race, does not mean that they don't deserve representation, right? But man, when you're under 20% voter. Pardon me, turnout in Hartford. That excuse my French, that sucks. That's awful. Now, again, in my town in Wallingford, as Dan said, and I think he said we were the biggest turnout or whatever of a medium-sized town, there was, you know, for the first time, our buddy, our pal, Mayor William Dickinson, who used to buy Boy Scout popcorn for my son. Didn't like to spend money. Two words, town pool. Mayor Cervoni, if you're listening. So 50-something percent is interesting, but Wallingford's always had a good turnout, usually. And the fact that when you have a 20 or 21 term, whatever Bill Dickinson was, 20 or 21 term incumbent who finally says that's it, of course you're going to get a big turnout like that. But it's just, it's you know, and again, this is one of these problems, right? And we talk about them all the time. Whether it's crime, whether it's poverty, whether it's infrastructure issues, the degradation of the family unit, whatever. There seem to be areas of these problems that we have been battling for 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And I don't know how you fix that. I don't know how you fix that. For example, this constant push to register people to vote. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. But, man, I don't know about you. When I turned 18, I couldn't wait to register to vote. Honestly, I think I went down to City Hall in New Haven probably 2 or 3 days after my 18th birthday, 1979. Back then, and maybe you have the same feeling I do, and a lot of 16-year-olds don't get their driver's licenses now. They don't feel it's important to drive. 18-year-olds don't register to vote. I mean, these were steps that you and I perceived. If you're about my age, give or take 5 or 10 years, right? We perceive these steps as becoming adults, right? Oh, I can vote now. I have no idea of politics, but I can vote. Or I can drive Dad's car, or I can drive our van to make deliveries from our family store. You felt like an adult, even if it was superficial. I wonder if that still exists. I don't know. I don't know. So I take a few days off here, back live today. Hello. And I see the tap dancing hasn't ended. In fact, it's it's only getting into higher gear. Hey, how are you? That story that Chris had at the top of the hour regarding, and actually it was in yesterday's Connecticut Post, regarding how we're going to tackle the absentee ballot situation in Bridgeport. Come on. Who really thinks? Come on. Stop. As an old radio buddy of mine used to say, I didn't fall off the turnip truck at the farm yesterday. All right? And we're talking about the declaration from House Speaker Matt Ritter that, well, what we've seen in Bridgeport, I'm just paraphrasing here what he said, but, you know, Matt Ritter said, saying, well, you know, something is going to be done about the absentee ballot problems in Bridgeport. Oh, really? And what that might be what? That might be what? Because, again, they're already saying, and they being the Democrats in charge of the State House, now maybe they'll prove me wrong on this. And gosh darn it, wouldn't that be fun, till her daddy took her T-Bird away? Wouldn't that be fun if I was actually proven wrong on this? Right? But we got another story yesterday about, well, something's going to be done about what happened in Bridgeport, but it's got to be tailored to Bridgeport. Right? Because this is only a particular problem. This only manifests itself in Bridgeport. What? Again, let me take a little bit more of a harsher scenario here, if I might. If murders are happening in a certain city, or if carjackings are happening in a certain city, or if brutal stabbings are only happening in a certain city, so you only tailor the laws for those crimes, for that city, and say, well, but, you know, the rest of the state is okay, which would be fine. That might be the reality here. But notice how everything that is said by the Democratic leadership in Hartford is so careful to say, well, we're not going to try and take back anybody's right to vote here. Well, who said you had to? Again, this notion here, this ridiculous, idiotic, asinine notion that it's so difficult to vote. Oh, my God, it's so difficult to vote. You actually have to know when election day is. You actually have to obtain an absentee ballot legally. You actually have to, perish the thought, handle that absentee ballot legally. Last week's election in Bridgeport essentially made moot by a judge's decision, we all know, to toss out the results of the September primaries. So we are, on one hand, waiting for the date of the new primary. I guess the Gomes people want it sooner than later. I don't know. So Matt Ritter says Monday, 2 days ago, you cannot ignore what has happened, and so we'll have to look at it. You're going to look at it. That's good. That's great. That's fantabulous. But with a full legislative session, says here in the Connecticut Post, set to begin in January, Ritter said lawmakers have begun discussions about revisiting the issue. Those discussions, he stressed, and here we go, would not result in any bill to seriously curtail the ability of Connecticut residents to cast ballots. And there's the elephant in the room, folks. I am telling you, don't fall for the garbage we're going to hear from Hartford in a few months. Well, yeah, that would be good, but that would harm people's ability to cast ballots. How exactly? So this is going to be the real out. I'm just preparing you for this. This is going to be the real out that the majority Democrats are going to use in Hartford when anything that's either proposed by the Republicans or maybe by people like Common Cause or the League of Women Voters strikes them as a little too harsh. Well, as but they say they're going to more narrowly tailor what they do to address the issues in Bridgeport. So wait a minute now. Is that how it works? Is that how it works? We tailor legislation or required legislative action to individual cities. Oh, that's how it works now. Is it now? Look, folks, you may think I'm being a little over the top here. Well, maybe I am, because I am telling you, I've been watching this stuff. I'm 62 years old. I've been watching this stuff ever since my first radio news job, which came when I was 23. Okay, so I've been watching this for 39, 40, 41 years, give or take a few here and there. I've seen how these people talk. Matt Ritter said, you can't, here's a quote from Speaker Ritter, and I'll quote him at his word here, quote, you can't let an isolated situation lead the state to taking a wrecking ball to our election statutes, end quote. Well, who's talking about that? He's, folks, I'm begging you, do you understand what they're doing here? You understand what they're doing here? They're prepping the soil here for anything that Republicans suggest, or the League of Women Voters suggests, or Common Cause, or the Working Families Party, or the Green Party, or Bridgeport Generation. Now, whoever's going to suggest it, they're going to say, "No, well, why not? Well, that's going to take a wrecking ball to our election statutes." I mean, come on, Mr. Speaker, sir, with all due respect, who's saying that? Who's saying that they want to take a wrecking ball to any election statutes? Come on. Stop trying to poison the well here. You know what you're doing here. Please stop that. Quote, the absentee ballot voting is important to people. You have to be mindful of the vast majority of people do it without any incident. Exactly. And that's the point. You want to nip this in the bud. You want to, and by the way, his previous statement here, isolated situation, this has happened in other, Stamford, hello. Other cities and towns, it does happen now. Yes, Bridgeport has taken this graft to another level. I mean, this is like Olympic level. This is like, you know, roll the ABC Olympic theme level here. But you can't, with any notion of serving the public, you can't come out and with a straight face say, well, this is a really bad problem in Bridgeport, so we're going to tailor things to Bridgeport. How does that work? Exactly. If you're serious about passing legislation, and maybe you are, and maybe you'll come up with something that I never thought of, and I'll sit here 6 or 8 months or a year or 2 years or 10 years from now saying, boy, you know that thing that Matt Ritter and the Democrats came up with, you know, back in 2023 or 2024? What a great idea that was. But again, Matt Ritter says it. Martin Looney says it. Bob Duff says it. You keep hearing the same thing. Well, let's not overreact. Really, Bridgeport, it's a laughingstock. Do you people understand it? It was on Fox the other night. It was all over the Associated Press. I saw some references to it in some international publications. And we have legislative leaders in Hartford who should come out and say something to the effect of, you're damn right we're going to fix this, and we're going to put penalties on this so punitive that nobody's ever going to think of doing it again, because we cannot do this to the votes of the fine people of Bridgeport, Hartford, or New Haven, or anywhere else in this state. It is just, folks, what did I tell you 2 months ago? Watch how they say things. Others urging a more cautious approach in reacting to the unfolding allegations in Bridgeport, noting that proven instances of fraud remain rare elsewhere in the state. Oh, my God, they keep going back to this. They keep going back to this. And I will go back to my comparison to this. if people get stabbed and murdered and carjacked and whatever in Bridgeport, does that mean because it doesn't happen in the state that the laws should not apply equally because we have to be careful about how we adjudicate them in Bridgeport? This is foolish. Bob Duff, Democrat, Norwalk, quote, I think we have to see what happens with the investigation, unquote. Gee, thanks. Quoting again, if there's places we need to make changes, we should. Boy, that sounds committal, huh? Boy, Bob, you really went out on a limb there, didn't you? Oh, boy, nothing like putting your rear end on the line here. Nothing like being passionate about it and saying, oh, geez, I don't know, like this is unacceptable. We have to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Folks, look, I'm just telling you, and I had to open with this. Because, I know I was off since last Friday. It's great to be back. Had a nice long weekend. Relaxed, took walks, relaxed more, slept, ate, relaxed more, took walks. But I kept, you know, tabs as to what was going on here. And when I saw this story, the message never changes. Why are they so cautious on this? Ask yourself this. And not just because I said it. Ask yourself why members of the Democratic leadership in Hartford, when you ask them about this, whether it's us on shows like this or whether it's, the people in the Hartford Current of the Connecticut Mirror, the Connecticut News Junkie, whatever. Why is their first reaction to this? Hey, let's not overreact here. What? Let's not overreact. Anybody see the video? Everybody remember there's no video from 2019, but, you know, one of the main people being accused here, 2019 as well. But again, from the Democratic committee heads and the majority leaders in Hartford, well, you know, we have to be careful because we don't want to disenfranchise anybody. Yeah, I know that, Sherlock. No, you know what? Folks, trust me, I am warning you on this. That they will put, and here's the thing you have to worry about. What are they going to do about ballot harvesting? See, yeah, I understand a lot of people don't like the drop boxes. Some do, some don't. But when we come back, we'll talk about the key issue here, which in some reason, if you don't crack down or at least put harsher penalties for ballot harvesting, this is all going to turn into a joke.